This week's episode of the FitCast is brought to you by TurbulenceTraining.com. Boost muscle growth and blowtorch body fat at TurbulenceTraining.com.
I'm Kevin Larrabee.
And I'm John Williams.
And with us this week, we have a special guest, Lou Schuler.
Dr. John Berardi.
One-on-one with Craig Ballantyne.
One-on-one interview with Bill Hartman.
I'm Eric Cressy.
Can't forget our shakes this week.
It's a hell of a super shake.
Yeah, let's start off with this week's news. Need any updates for the FitCast to get the show notes with all the links for the show, just go to thefitcast.com for all your FitCast needs.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the FitCast, FitCast episode number 35. My name is Kevin Larrabee, and with us this week is Charles Staley. You may know him from his many articles up on TNation.com, his book Muscle Logic, his ebook The Ultimate Guide to Massive Arms, and just as of late, many of you might have been checking out his EDT DVD. So, Charles, I just want to welcome you to the show.
Hey, Kevin. Thanks so much. Really appreciate it.
No, it's a huge pleasure to have you on the show. We've been talking about getting you on the show for, it seems like, a couple months. And it's great that we finally were able to work out a time that worked for both of us. So.
Yeah, me too. Me too. Glad to be here.
So I'm very excited. We're just going to jump right into the Q&A. So, first off, I just want to ask you, can you describe what EDT is to the audience?
Yeah, it's kind of funny. Like, here's the story about EDT. This is just kind of something I was doing years ago, and obviously everyone's methods kind of continuously evolve. But, I wrote this article for T-MAG, T-Nation Biotest, on escalating density training. And I started getting just insane amounts of email and people writing and calling me and actually some pretty well-known luminaries in the field just telling me, Charles, you've got to, like, you know, franchise this. And, there's so many people making incredible progress on the system. And the first thought I had was, how am I ever going to do anything with this? It's so simple that I can't even imagine, once I wrote that first article, I felt like I had already kind of blown my load. I didn't know what else can you say. It's just so simple. But luckily for me, and as it turns out, it's so simple that it's a little disarming, and people end up being kind of confused by it, because it is kind of an auto-regulatory system, mm-hmm. meaning that you kind of make your own decisions within a certain framework on the fly. So that ends up confusing people. So now, I don't know how many articles and books and DVDs later, the confusion still is going strong. So that means I can do more and more products and confuse people even further. And so, which is not my goal. I'm being facetious. I mean, my whole kind of brand is trying to find ways to simplify all this stuff, mm-hmm. Down to its essentials. So what is EDT? It is basically a training system that is based more on performance than experience. So one of the things that I say at seminars is that you should focus on performance, not pain. And one of the biggest kind of errors that people make, whether it's conscious or unconscious, is that we assign value to a workout based on how much it hurts. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So, and by hurts, I mean by that the pain and discomfort and soreness and lactic acid burn and throwing up or whatever it is, all those things that happen either during the workout or afterwards or even the next day. And that's the experience. But really, fitness gain is directly correlated to your work output. So just like anything else in life, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you go to college for 4 years, the quality of your education is not directly correlated to how much how difficult it was. It's based on, the work that you did, the quality of the work that you did. So you could go through 4 arduous years of college and do terrible, So basically, EDT is based on time management principles. It's basically how much work can you do in a set period of time. And So then you start getting to decisions about sets and reps and rest periods, and the idea is to organize all those parameters so that it facilitates a high work output as opposed to a high, you know, pain threshold. Make sense?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So, you know, so just to walk people through this, and I hopefully this isn't kind of broken record for people who have already experienced this, but, you know, you set a time limit. We call it the PR zone. PR means personal record. And that's 15 minutes long, and that 15-minute PR zone is kind of like a bucket where you put all your sets and reps. It's where all the work takes place.
Mm-hmm.
So within that PR zone, you have two opposing or antagonistic exercises or drills. And there's many ways. Opposing can mean different things. It can mean something as simple as, elbow flexion versus elbow extension. That's the purest form of antagonistic exercise. But it also could be an upper body exercise versus a lower body exercise. There's kind of different ways to do this, but the concept, this is all based on Sherrington's law of reciprocal inhibition. It just means that, you know, when you do flexion, the extensors have to relax and kind of quiet down to facilitate that. So by doing the one exercise, you're actually fostering a faster recovery of the opposing exercise. So you take your two exercises, and in your warm-up sets, you kind of estimate a 10-rep max load for each exercise. And once that's been established, you basically just start the stopwatch and off you go. And what happens, though, is that since we're not looking for pain, we're looking for performance, you don't do sets of 10 with the 10-rep max weight. You do sets of 5. Because I'm not so much focused on what happens in one set, but I'm more focused on what happens in a given period of time. So my kind of viewpoint is not quite as microscopic as some people's is. I want to know, what do you do in a PR zone? What did you accomplish in a workout? More so than what happened during any given set. So the clock is ticking, and you go to your first exercise, you do a set of 5. And then you rest as long as you feel like resting. As long as it's not more than 15 minutes, and you do a set of 5 of your second exercise. And so you go back and forth between the two exercises doing sets of 5. And then as fatigue begins to accumulate, there are two adjustments you can make, and they are both counterintuitive. What you do is you drop your reps and you increase the rest intervals. So after 5 or 6 minutes, you might drop down to sets of 4, and then you might drop down to sets of 3. And people are different. So some people might just keep going with sets of 3 for the whole 15 minutes. Other people might drop down to sets of 2, 1. But the salient point here is that when the 15-minute PR zone is finished, you've done a certain number of reps, and that's your PR. That's your personal record.
Mm-hmm.
So then the next time you go to repeat that PR zone, you know when you start, you know when you're going to be finished, and you know exactly what you have to do, which is to beat your PR. So it becomes, the workout becomes kind of a competition with yourself. And if you have a speck of competitive instinct at all, this will bring it out in you,
Mm-hmm.
So it becomes kind of fun, and it becomes kind of a competition.
Very good. Now we'll jump into some of the listener questions. First off, there's one coming from Brian. He asks, what do you think about dropping bench press from the routine for, say, a month or two in an attempt to correct some problems with posture? I'm not very strong as far as my bench goes, but while I was in high school, I concentrated on the minor muscles more than I should have, and my backside is lacking. My goals are strength-based, mainly in the lower body, and he says, with an exclamation point, I want a big squat.
Well, dropping your bench press, if your goal is to have a big squat, then I'm all for dropping the bench press,
mm-hmm.
just to start with. So there's some intuitive logic, I guess, with that. Now, by that question, I'm not entirely sure. Most people are inclined, he's talking about two different issues here. He's talking about postural issues, it sounds like.
Yeah.
But then he's also talking about a performance issue. So as far as the classic postural, round shoulder, kyphotic, impingement and so forth, I'm not necessarily against bench pressing. The problem with bench pressing is not so much that you're bench pressing. The problem is you're not doing the things that you need to do to, you know, instill better scapular control.
Mm-hmm.
And it is true. I'm not known as being a physical therapist, and I'm not a physical therapist. And there are, this is not my strongest forte, but I can tell you that most people at rest have scapula that are, you know, not retracted and depressed as much as they should be to permit that supraspinatus muscle to have enough space to move, and that's where impingement comes from. So you need to be doing, there's all sorts of drills, and I think Bill Hartman put together a nice DVD with some of these drills, but, you know, that encourage scapular retraction and depression. You need to be doing that stuff. So I'm okay with bench pressing. The problem with bench pressing is not so much that it's a bad exercise, but it's that more so than other exercises, it becomes kind of more of a demonstration event for people as opposed to an exercise.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? I mean, you never see anyone who loads up their chin-up to see how much total weight they can do on a chin-up, right?
Exactly.
Or a glute ham raise, you know. But for some reason with a bench press, the urge to just do as much weight as possible just kind of takes over. So this is, I guess, what I'm trying to say. It's a matter of context. It's okay to bench press, but put it in context and give it its due share of attention. So to me, if you want a bigger squat and you want to correct postural issues, if you're going to bench press, do it at the very end of the workout instead of the beginning of the workout, and make sure that you're allotting equal time and energy for some of these scapular exercises. I think is really important.
Very good. The next question comes from Matt, and he asks, I followed Charles Pulling Your Chain program from T-Nation and saw some good results, many of which I attribute to the various pulls in the program. What would you recommend as a follow-up program to this one, or would you recommend taking some time off and then rerunning the program?
Yeah. Well, I think you should pretty much just do Body for Life.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just kidding.
I was gonna have to stop the interview for a second. So
yeah, we were gonna have to. Yeah, you have to stop payment on the check, right? So I'm just kidding. Well, you know, look, just continue. You know, the hardest thing in training, in terms of programming, I think, and the thing that kind of perplexes people is finding that sweet spot between having continuity in your training, but having sufficient variation,
mm-hmm.
so that you're not suffering from overuse injury type syndromes, and so that you're not prematurely, you know, experiencing a plateau, and just to keep yourself motivated, right? So that's the trick. So, you know, you wouldn't, I use school as an example a lot, but it wouldn't make much sense to study Spanish for a year and then Italian for a year and then Japanese for a year and then, you know, I don't know, you get the point, German for a year.
Mm-hmm.
You would just kind of never get anywhere because there's no continuity. So you need, you know, we call this same but different. So I think that on that program that he's talking about that really features derivatives of the Olympic lifts, pulls and so forth, you continue the program, but you just continue to instill slight variations of all these pulls. And the reason that we used pulls in that article is because there are an infinite number of variations that you can use without even getting into the Olympic lifts, you know. So, I mean, you know, you can pull with a wide grip and a narrow grip, and you can pull from the floor, and you can pull from knee level, and you can actually pull from lower than the floor by standing on a platform so that you have even more range of motion. You can pull with chains or bands attached to the bar. You know, there's just so many variations. So if those exercises are valuable for you and they are taking you closer to your goal, you just need to always do those exercises. But the trick is finding just little permutations and different variations of those exercises so that you always have variety within the context of continuity. So for the person who asked that question, if that program is, you know, it's kind of funny, and I don't mean any disrespect to the person who asked the question, because we all do this, but it's kind of funny. It's like, wow, that program works so great for me. What do I do next? Well, just keep doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Dan Johns has a great saying that is just classic, which, that program worked so great for me, I stopped doing it, right? We all do this. You know, don't stop, just keep doing it. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes it's tough, sometimes it's monotonous, sometimes you have to grind it out. But with just the slightest amount of creativity, man, there's just so many variations of things, and it just, it always amazes me that guys go and really use basically maybe a collection of 12 exercises for years and years and years. And you could take those 12 core exercises and come up with just, you know, innumerable variations with just a little bit of creativity, you know?
Absolutely.
I mean, you can do, we all know what a plank is, right? That static abdominal exercise. Mm-hmm. So you can do a plank, and then you can do a plank with one leg in the air, and then you can do a plank with weight on your back, and you can do a plank with your arms on a physio ball, and then you can do a plank with your arms on the ball and trace letters of the alphabet on top of the ball, and you can do a plank on a ball with a training partner trying to kind of unbalance you a little bit manually, right? There's just so many ways to do these exercises. It's just endless. So stay with the core exercises that work for you and tease them out. Find ways to instill variety within that framework of continuity.
Very good. We'll jump to the next question that comes from Brendan. Would EDT differ at all for an athlete?
Yeah, it does. The EDT that most people are familiar with is designed kind of for the mass market, and what I mean by that is basically body composition, bodybuilding, fat loss.
Mm-hmm.
But we do use EDT principles with higher intensity type lifts, and I'll just give you one of the primary parameters that we use, which is 80 to 85% of one rep max. For up to 14 sets of two with 1 minute rest in between sets. So what happens is you shoot for 14 sets of two, and if you can accomplish that, then that's 15 minutes and you're done. If you don't accomplish that, let's say that you lose a rep. Now, by the way, this is for big exercises, and athletes should be spending time doing things like Olympic lifts and power lifts and chins and rows and, you know, the big multi-joint type movements. So let's say that you embark upon this and you get stuck at set 12 and you miss your second rep. Well, then the next time you come back, you try to get further down the ladder. You try to get 13 or 14. Once you accomplish 14 sets of two, the next time you come back, you increase the load by 5 pounds or 5%, whichever is less, mm-hmm. and you start all over again. So that's an example of a protocol that we use for athletes.
Very cool. We'll jump into the next question from Nicholas, and he asks, many coaches often claim that tempo and time under tension play a big role in different goals. For instance, stability training often has a much different tempo than power training. And after reading some T-Nation articles, time under tension and tempo don't seem to be a major part of EDT. How then does EDT meet different training goals, hypertrophy versus power, strength versus stability?
Yeah, good question. Tempo kind of cracks me up, I got to tell you, man. And there's a place for it, and I'll elucidate that in a second. But
okay.
Just like, even like, did you ever read Body for Life?
I can't say
you
I did.
Admit it. Yes, you did. So anyway, no,
that
I'm
was before my time. I'm still too young to read that.
Body for Life is pretty funny. So like Bill Phillips in this book says, you know, every rep should take you long enough to say, I'm building my body for life. So like you're doing bench presses, right? So everyone's like, I'm building my body for life. So I always say like a better one, one that works much better is make checks payable to Staley Training Systems, PO Box 2334, Gilbert, Arizona, 85296. That works way better as a little tempo cue. But in all seriousness, all right, yeah, you need time under tension. Like, I firmly believe that every time you do a set, some period of time should elapse.
Mm-hmm.
I do think that's critical. But, and being a little bit more serious, yes, when you are working, we were talking about shoulder impingement before. That's a motor control drill. You're trying to instill motor control and motor learning. And, you know, my former life, I was a martial arts instructor. And one of the things I used to like people to do is, like, slow motion punches. And anybody who's listening to this right now, you can just do a little quick experiment. If you just stand up right now and throw like the fastest punch you can throw, it doesn't matter if it's a jab or a right hand, but just throw a really fast punch. And if you do that, you might recognize that you were only aware of the start position and the finish position, but you were not really as aware of the in-between points, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you throw a punch slowly, it enhances your awareness of the entire motion rather than just the very beginning and the very end. So that little example, I think, illustrates the importance of tempo. So if you're doing, for example, the infamous Blackburn exercise, you know, for scapular control, you know, those kind of things should be done more slowly because you're trying theoretically, you're trying to change your motor control patterns. Once a movement is mastered, then it's time to go balls out, you know, and that includes for bodybuilding purposes. So the reason that people really are attracted to slow tempos is because, what did I say at the very beginning of this call? Because it hurts more.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And it's stupid, you know, other than the use that I just mentioned. There's not much of a point of doing that. Now, can you make a point if you have a rank beginner and you're not sure what their structural, you know, tolerances are? Yeah, certainly it's more conservative to go slow at the beginning. But once you ascertain that that can be handled, then gradually increase the speed, increase the speed, increase the speed. So, you know, one of the universal kind of mindsets that exists out there in bodybuilding is that people think that good form means to move slowly. It's not true. You know, you could have terrible form and move slowly. Just because you're moving slow doesn't mean your form is good. You know, they're entirely separate concepts. So it's people's desire to experience pain from their workouts that attracts them to this slow tempo kind of thing.
Sounds good. We'll jump into the next question that comes from a different Matt, but I'd be interested to find out what exercises you suggest for the lower body when designing an EDT split. I know that you think that squat deadlifts are brutal when doing EDT, so as a result, should one stick to unilateral work like Romania deadlifts?
Yeah. It's kind of funny. I don't like the idea of using the EDT format that we talked about toward the beginning of the call with things like squats and deadlifts.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you think about it, what is the antagonistic movement pattern to a squat or a deadlift, which is full body extension? And the answer is flexion, meaning core work or, you know, crunches, sit-ups, pikes, you know. And you don't want to be doing squats and deadlifts on tired abdominal musculature, you know.
Mm-hmm.
At least I don't. But it's funny. You would not believe the emails I get from people who do it. I've never told anyone to do it. They just, you know, intuit this. And, you know, I'm kind of like, you know, like Dr. Phil, like, well, let me know how that's working for you. You know, it's just a little scary to me. People are out there getting away with it. What I like better is to use EDT as kind of a parasitic type of scenario. Use more conventional loading parameters for things like squats and deadlifts. And then when you move on to your auxiliary exercises, use EDT for that.
Mm-hmm.
Do you follow what I mean? I think that's a better kind of way to go. So if you're squatting, you could use that 14 sets of two parameter that I just mentioned, or you could, you know, you pick it, okay? You know, 10 sets of three, 5 sets of five, whatever it is that you like, just do it. That's your core lift. Then if, for example, you know, I don't know, you're doing you know, glute ham raises and ball crunches, let's say, use EDT for that. And I think that's a better way to go.
Sounds good. Charles, I just want to ask you, can you let the audience know a little bit of what your EDT DVD is about? Because I know you talked about it before, like saying that it helps explain the whole process of EDT and setting up a program.
You know what the DVD does that I think is useful is, you know, you can read the book, and the book is... The book is very nice about explaining the principles and the concepts behind EDT,
mm-hmm.
and also there's a bazillion, you know, training cycles in that book. So if you're looking for training cycles, the book is really nice for that from that point of view. what the DVD does is it actually shows you a couple of different PR zones, because what you find is that when you read about EDT, as hard as I try to really get the point across, when people watch the DVD, inevitably they come back and say, oh, you know, when I saw it, you know, I realized that I didn't quite have the concept. And, you know, so seeing, we actually have two different PR zones, one that's a little bit heavier load and the other with kettlebells. When you see it, you really get a much better sense of the auto-regulatory kind of nature of EDT.
Mm-hmm.
And we also go through some problem solving and some biomechanics and so forth. So those two products are actually very complementary, but that's the value of the DVD, I think, is actually seeing what PR zones look like.
Very cool. And just lastly, before we go, I just want to ask you, do you have any seminars or books that are coming out in the future?
Yeah, well, actually, I'm doing the JP Fitness event in Little Rock, huh?
Oh, awesome. I know JP hasn't thrown up a confirmation yet, but that's awesome.
Oh, maybe I'm letting the cat out of the bag. I don't even know when and where that is, but I know it's in Little Rock. I don't know, but I told him I'd do it, so I will be teaching there. As far as seminars coming up, I'm going to be at Iowa State University in March.
Mm-hmm.
I'm doing the JP Fitness event. What else am I doing? I will be in Italy this summer teaching. Theoretically, I'm going to be in Bermuda in May as well. That'll be fun. And then I will be in late October. I'm going to be teaching with Dr. John Berardi in Australia. So that, I'm probably missing something, but that's the highlights anyway of my goal last year was actually to not do any seminars this year, and now I'm having the biggest seminar year in the past 5 years. But anyway, that's helpful.
Yeah, it sounds like you're going all over the globe to do seminars now.
A little too much travel, but what else am I going to do? So yeah, so those are the primary seminars this year.
Very good. And also, just if anyone from our audience wants to get some more information on you or your products, where can they go for that?
You know, folks can just go to the website, which is charlesstaley.com. And it's not Stanley and it's not Daly, okay? So it's Charles, Staley. Or you can just Google my name and you find out there. And you can kind of, that's kind of our, you know, what people should do is sign up for my newsletter there. And I actually have like a 200-page ebook called The Unnatural Athlete. We just give that to you just as a bribe for signing up to our list so that we can market to you basically until you buy or until you die. That's kind of our philosophy. So, but you can also, if you want to be this way, you can actually subscribe, get the free ebook, and then unsubscribe. And then we won't hassle you anymore. But yeah, it's kind of a cool giveaway, and people are really shocked that we give that book away. But we'd like to have people on our list so that we can put out the newsletter and do a little marketing here and there. But, you know, you can find out all about all our products, and we've got a distance coaching group and, you know, all sorts of stuff going on.
Very good. Well, again, Charles, I just want to thank you so much for coming on the show, and I really hope we can have you on again in the future sometime.
I would love to.
Well, once again, I just want to say thank you, and for everyone out there, thanks for listening. Thanks for downloading. Don't forget to check out thefitcast.com for all the show notes. I'll throw up all the links that we talked about in this show on there. And that will pretty much wrap it up for episode 35. We'll see you next time.
You know what's funny about EDT? What I always have people say is they're like, well, come on, man, you cannot accomplish anything. You can't get anything done in 15 minutes. Well, first of all, I'm not saying the workout is 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying the workout may be one or two or three PR zones of 15 minutes. So first of all, I'm not saying it's 15 minutes. But then once people do this, then they come back and say, holy crap, like that was, you know, the most intense 15 minutes I ever did in my whole entire life,
mm-hmm.
You know, so it is kind of very counterintuitive. And it's kind of funny, you know, like it really the misconceptions about it are kind of funny. A lot of people assume it's a real newbie kind of novice workout kind of thing, but you know, in many cases it's too intense for that, you know. So I don't know, it's just kind of an interesting little critter, you know.
Well, definitely. I'll keep you posted on my progress, see what happens in about
That'd be cool.
4 or 6 weeks, and I'm really looking forward to seeing how I feel tomorrow, and I'm just going to be doing my foam rolling, some foam rolling and some light cardio tomorrow to see if I can survive. But
I was going to say, on the one question, I had a little comeback for that question about, you know, how come you don't use EDT for rehab, or, you know, I was going to say, you know, it might put you in rehab, like it's not good for rehab. But, you know, the big thing is just emotionally, psychically, to just measure your, you know, just to you got to be a little conservative, because you, trust me, you can burn yourself to a crisp doing this stuff. You know, it can really become daunting. So, you know, you just have to, be kind of calculated about it. So.